The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
The Chicago Bears season ends as they lose 9-21 in the Superdome to the New Orleans Saints. I bring on Brandon Robinson, one of my co-hosts on the Rule of Three podcast and defensive specialist, to talk through this game as we get set to head into the offseason. It's all coming at you on this episode of Bear With Me. What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Bear With Me, a Chicago Bears podcast hosted by yours truly, Robert Schmitz, right here on the Windy City Gridiron podcasting channel. And honestly, I'm probably a lot more upbeat than you are. After the Bears having just wrapped up a 9-21, what felt like a beatdown, I was happy to be there, which is not something that a whole lot of Bears fans want to say. And we actually got a close game that lasted for much longer than just one half of football. This is going to sound wild, but given that the Bears season is over, it ended on a playoff appearance that actually had us looking like half of a playoff team for the majority of a football game. And that's more than I can say for, well, in this case, we're only just now getting into like the nitty gritty of the Browns and Steelers game, but man, are the Browns pounding them. So not a blowout by any stretch of the imagination, though certainly not a convincing close loss. But either way, the season's over, which is never a good thing. And I've brought along Brandon Robinson to help me digest the game. Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, great is a weird one to talk about because the season's over, and that means it's time to see what happens as we head into this offseason. But it was a weird game to watch because for all as much as I've heard people talk about how the Nagy laser game plan has changed a lot, I saw the Bears try to do a lot of very similar stuff to what they've done. Maybe I'm seeing it wrong. They ran a lot of outside zone. The Saints just shut it down. They ran a lot of those play action levels based rollouts. The Saints shut those down too. And the Bears actually managed to scheme open a wide open Javon Wims in the end zone off of a really tricky little wildcat play that they've been building up to. As we know, that wildcat or like package has only been a run recently, and Javon Wims let that thing slip right through his hands off of, I will say it, a gorgeous ball from Mitchell Trubisky that if he'd been throwing that his entire career, his startership would literally have never been in question. But either way, it was funny because this Bears offense came out ready to scrap, or at least it seemed that way, came away with no points there. Real bummer. It's a weird game to talk about because it was 3-7 for what felt like an overwhelming majority of the game before the offense couldn't get anything going. And I'm left feeling like this was a lot closer than I ever thought it would be. Am I the only one feeling that way?
No, not at all. I mean, I expected this game to be a blowout from start to finish. I mean, you consider that Vildor is starting, Duke Shelley is starting, and Manti Te'o, like, you put that on any NFL defense, and I mean, your expectations are really low. And then you factor in the fact that they're playing the Saints with Michael Thomas back and Alvin Kamara, and I mean, they're going to put up points. And it was exact opposite of that. The defense played spectacularly in the first half, and they held on as much as they could. But with the offense and Darnell Mooney being out, I mean, that's, you're in another tough spot because the Saints are, they're a really good defensive matchup against the Bears because they're just obsessed with playing man coverage, which usually bites them in the butt. But when they're playing against a team that loves RPOs, loves running outside zone because they can get numbers in the box, But now instead, because they play so much man coverage, now they can load the box because of that.
Yeah, it was definitely not a very good matchup for the Bears offense, and I think we saw that in full form. But especially with your defense experience and the fact that, if I could be really honest with you, Brandon, I want to start off this end of season podcast talking about the positive things. I was amazed. So I've become very Belichickian in attitude, which, in case you don't know, Belichick's like overall philosophy is that there's no danger quite like somebody on the field that you can't cover. If you can't cover the opposing best guy, you have to commit two people to him, and there's just nothing you can do. And if I was going to tip my hat to anybody in this game, it would be Kyle Fuller, because he took on Michael Thomas one-on-one for an overwhelming amount of that game and really only allowed one blown gasket and returned it with a nice third down stop around the mid second half. I thought Fuller did a great job against Michael Thomas, and I could also go on and talk about the interior defensive line and how they squared up a very good Saints offensive line and stuffed a running game that, suffice to say, Minnesota could not do. And overall, like you said, this defense, its big players needed to play in a game where the Bears didn't have a whole lot of their defensive personnel. And with Roquan Smith out, I mean, that might be one of their most important defensive personnels based on the Pagano's scheme. They came to play. They played about as lights out as I think they could have against a very good team in the Saints. I don't know. What did you think? I'm sure you saw more than I did.
Yeah, I thought they played pretty well. I expected them to stop the run decently, just because while Roquan is a really, really good player, he's not the type of player that just scraps blocks and makes a bunch of tackles in that way. He's flying from sideline to sideline. So his value really isn't – well, his value of him being out isn't really diminishing the run defense. So I thought they played pretty well there. The dink and dunk – of Drew Brees is just what kills you, because the thing is, you have to play zone coverage against him, because you got to cover the soft zones underneath, and when you have so many backups playing in there, it's just really tough. And especially when they get guys hurt. Sherrick McManus, he was out, and then I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank.
It's Houston Carson. He left Houston in the middle Carson of the game.
Yeah, he's been playing so well in their dime packages. But, and I thought they were playing him over Deion Bush a decent amount. But then as soon as he went out, we saw Deion Bush in there a bunch. And I hate using the word lost when you're talking about football, but it just seemed like he was not prepared to play. Every single time he was in right before the snap, he's looking all around at everybody else to find out what his assignments were. And you can't have that against Drew Brees.
Absolutely not. I mean, it's the sort of thing where I can tell you that my specialty is not with defensive backs. There's so much going on there that, for those of you who don't know, most of my understanding actually comes from bouncing things off of Brandon. All I can tell you is that the interior defensive line had to win against the run, because if the Saints can run on you, they can really kill you. And credit to what the Bears were able to do, the interior defensive line, with John Jenkins picking off a pass, Akeem Hicks, John Jenkins, Bilal Nichols, Brent Urban shutting down the Saints running game, at least enough that the Saints felt like they needed to pass the ball a little more. They forced the Saints to test their secondary, and I'll even throw some credit to guys like Duke Shelley, who rebounded from what seemed to be an atrocious game against the Packers and put up a pretty spicy contest. Again, does that mean he's the future starting nickelback or an all-star in the league? Probably not. I mean, I think that's a stretch after one game, but I expected, like you're talking about, folks like Emmanuel Sanders to shine a little more, and instead it's that fourth option, the guy who returns their punts, who I'm drawing a blank on his name, that ended Deontay up getting Harris. The ball. Deontay, yeah, Harris, who got the ball almost the entire game because they were trying to pick on Shelley, and he pulled him down behind the line to gain quite a lot in those settings.
What's crazy to me is, like, I've always seen Deontay Harris flash in so many games. Last year he was great in punt returning, and I was always confused why the Saints didn't use him more. Because he's so fast, he's so quick, he's so electric, he can threaten defensive backs in so many different ways, especially when you get in 11 personnel, 10 personnel situations, to where he's one-on-one with a safety. And if you don't know how, like, safety's capabilities in man coverage, they do not match up very well against smaller guys, because they're usually big, taller guys that can't really match up like that. And so when you put him on a guy like Eddie Jackson, I know everybody's a little sour on Eddie Jackson right now, but Eddie Jackson is very, very good man coverage for a safety, but that is still a really big mismatch. And the Saints took advantage of that all game long.
That's so interesting, because I actually wouldn't mind spending a little time on Jackson. I think what we would agree with is that that offsides there that led to the second touchdown is never what you want with a safety jumping off on fourth and three. I mean, I get it. I almost get it if it's an interior defensive lineman, even though they're probably a little more ready for the situation because they're on the line more often. But seeing your highly paid safety is never good in those moments. But one thing that I do think has been hard for Jackson this year that I'd love to get your take on. I know he's dropped his fair share of picks, and I know everybody wants to see interceptions from safeties because for some reason we equate safeties with interceptions, even though that's not always true. It feels like Eddie Jackson's had an incredibly hard year from what I've watched that primarily comes from if he's covering his guy, he doesn't get thrown at all. It's like a hard rule, don't throw at him. But that means he gets his tackling tested a lot, which is not the highlight of his game. And he then starts to overplay assignments because he's hunting for that pick, just like all the fans are frustrated with it. You know, Eddie Jackson's frustrated with it. And from there, he's starting to pull himself out of position every once in a while because he thinks it's going to A, and the quarterback reads him overplaying it, goes to option B. Am I crazy in seeing this?
No, not at all. It's actually kind of spot on. And that's what's so tough with a player like Eddie Jackson, because the kind of safety that I want, the kind of safety that I'm thinking about, is always in the right position to not make a play, to make somebody else make a play because you're in position so the quarterback doesn't want to throw it. The guy I always think of whenever I talk about this is Adrian Amos, because he doesn't make a lot of plays on the ball, but he's not giving up big plays either because he's just in position to make the quarterback not throw the ball. And that's just what you want. You want the quarterback to check it down on third down, and so you can rally and then force a punt. You're like, because the thing is, like, you're equating interceptions versus punts. I'll take my chances of a quarterback just not throwing it deep and just doing a punt instead of just getting an interception and it's still virtually a punt, just 20 yards versus 40 yards. And so I think Eddie Jackson, he wants the all pros. He wants the Pro Bowls. He knows he can make plays. So instead of putting himself in the best position, the position he's supposed to be, he's pressing, he's putting himself out of position. He's trying to make other people's plays basically. And I don't think that's the best move for the team or for him himself.
To your point, I mean, when it comes to interceptions and defensive backs, the name that I always think of is actually quite the opposite. You listed a good example in Adrian Amos. I always flip the coin over and look at a bad example in Marcus Cooper, which, if you remember, Bears fans, he was a corner for the Bears after a 2016 season with the Cardinals that saw him give up a ridiculous passer rating. But Brandon, he had 5 interceptions, and having 5 interceptions is a good thing. But suddenly it dawned on me as we watched this guy kind of flail around and end up targeted an awful lot, that if you get thrown at enough, you may end up with the ball in your hands a couple of times. Like, if you get targeted some 85 times in a season and you break on the ball well for 4 of them, suddenly you're one of the leading defensive backs in interceptions, despite maybe not being a very good defensive back. And so it is interesting, like you're talking about, how our understanding of defensive backs can often be a little flawed, and that we want to see those sexy takeaways, but then you forget that to Sean Gibson, who almost got Duke Shelley an interception, was the guy who made the play, and Duke Shelley was almost the one who recovered the credit for just being in the right place at the right time. These interceptions are a lot harder to come away with, and often, as we saw in 2018, have more to do with exterior factors like pressuring the quarterback than they do just quote-unquote good coverage, because good coverage means you don't get targeted, right?
Exactly, and it's funny because I was looking at Duke Shelley during that play, and I'm like, because he's been covering so much grass lately. And by covering grass, I just mean that he's not in position to relate to the receiver or to the ball. He's basically in the middle of nowhere. And on that play, he was in the middle of nowhere. Tayshaun Gibson made a great pass breakup, and it fell right into his hands. And I, to go to Gibson, I thought he had a tremendous game. I've been talking to Robert a lot about how Tayshaun has actually been the one covering a lot of grass too. And I thought about how that's been hurting the defense, but he did the exact opposite this game. I thought he was in the right spots. He wasn't back put on too much. He was triggering on every single route in front of him. And he wasn't trying to do too much, but he was making plays. So I thought that was just really encouraging for him. He's going to be hitting free agency, and it'll be interesting to see what they do coming off of that performance.
It will be. And frankly, Brandon, hearing that Tayshaun Gibson improved like that, it has me asking the question that I think a lot of Bears fans have written off Chuck Pagano as a casualty of this season. And I got to tell you, I had written Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, Chuck Pagano, everybody off as a lost in the midst of the 6-game losing streak. But perspective changes things. And I'll tell you what, and I am, for those who can't see me, I'm like holding my face as I say this because I don't know how to feel, but if this was Chuck Pagano's last stand, it was pretty amazing, because with Manti Te'o, Kendall Vildor, and Duke Shelley, the Bears held the Saints to just 7 points for the first, I want to say, 40 minutes of football. They had forced what could have been 2 turnovers, instead was just 1 because of a bad bounce off the hands of Duke Shelley, again against an extremely good and I think much more talented than they are Saints offense. And when you talk about defensive coordinators taking their talent and turning it into something better than what it is, this would be a classic example right up there with Brandon Staley's fabulous performance against the Seattle Seahawks. And yet part of me thinks Chuck Pagano is going to be fired for the old school reason of, well, somebody's got to get fired at the end of a bad season. What do you think about all this?
Right. I mean, that's just the way it seems, because you think of all the allocation of resources they use on this defense, and it's just, you just automatically just equate that to success, that it's automatically, because they spent this money, that it's supposed to happen no matter what, no matter the injuries, no matter the circumstances, they have to do it. And I mean, I don't necessarily think that's the right move. If you don't have a capable replacement, you can't just fire a guy because you don't think that he's good enough. You got to know that someone else is better to fill his spot. And the thing is, when he was brought in, I wasn't a big fan of the move, just because he hadn't been a defensive coordinator since like 2011. He obviously was the head coach with the Colts and did well, but he wasn't calling the plays. So it just been so long, and you've seen that he's adapted Fangio's scheme. When he came in, he didn't bring his own scheme. He's running his watered down version of Fangio's scheme, because Fangio obviously had a lot of success here. So that was the right move. And it just, they haven't exactly run it what I believe is the right way to run it. And that's the thing is, like, while I think they could do better, it would be a lot worse to go to some veteran cover 3 style defense coordinator, because that's the exact opposite of the way that the NFL is going right now.
Which, I mean, yeah, it's hard for me to know, because I haven't watched enough just raw non-Bears defensive tape to really understand defensive schemes. I would tell you, I think offensive schemes are frankly a lot easier to understand than the way that defenses move around, because defenses are countering offenses, but offenses are pretty obvious. A zone read looks like a zone read. You can extrapolate from there. Defenses often are much more subtle in what they're doing, so I'll trust your opinion on that. But I will tell you that the fact that the Bears were able to keep this game as close as it was, despite the offense floundering for, I mean, the whole game. I would love to say that it was like that they, you know, they had it here or this and that. But then I keep going back to the fact that the Jets, for like the Flacco weeks of the season, were averaging 20 to 24 points a game. And that just means to me that, like, there is some aspect of motion in an NFL offense that's expectable. Like, you are supposed to move the ball at some point. And the fact that the Bears only had 3 points for the overwhelming majority of this game, and no, I am not going to take a 9-10 touchdown drive at the end of the game very seriously. That thing was over. It's it's tough to watch, but given that position, I thought the defense really was outstanding. Maybe I'm being too nice. What do you think?
No, they surprised me. Coming into the game, my score prediction was 38 to either 20 or 17. I thought the Saints were going to have their way with the Bears the entire game. I thought they were going to move the ball at will, and that's just not what happened. I thought they played tremendously in zone coverage. I really would love to know who's the guy that is coaching up all of these backups. Because the thing is, when I think of the zone coverage that I want to run against the Saints, I'm thinking of some kind of cover too. And if you're running cover two, you obviously have two deep safeties, and then you obviously have at least four rushers. So then you have five guys underneath. And when you think of the five guys underneath, at least three of them are going to be Vildor, Shelley, and Teo. So that's 60% right of your underneath coverage are backups or guys that are like barely in the league. So you get this kind of performance out of a team that's exactly what they do. They attack that underneath coverage, and that's a hell of a performance. You can't ask for more than that.
Mm-hmm. Really, the only negative that I think we take away from this game, if I could be really candid, and you and I have talked about this on like Twitter, what we're about to say is entirely speculation. But really, the only problem here is that Jalen Johnson missing now his third game in a row with a shoulder injury starts to ask that question of like, okay, so what's going on here? Because he had three shoulder surgeries in college. And I mean, my goodness, if he needs another surgery, which God forbid, but if he does, that's four, one in his rookie season, and you got to start wondering whether he's going to be one of those what if kinds of players that just never ended up healthy enough to play in the league. I am admittedly getting pretty worried about that.
So he had, I believe, two labrum surgeries on his left shoulder and one labrum surgery on his right, and so he hurt his right shoulder, and from what the Twitter doctors were saying, they said it looked like he dislocated his right shoulder. And what usually happens when you dislocate your right shoulder is your labrum will tear. And so he's missed now 3 or 4 weeks. And prior to this game, he had not practiced, which is obviously a really bad sign. And I think personally, him being in limited in practice this week was just pure gamesmanship, because he practiced, quote unquote, practiced every single day this week, but yet didn't play. You rarely see a guy practice the entire week without playing. At least he would usually miss one of the practices.
Not to mention, if I'm not mistaken, we've seen Kyle Long go through labrum issues before. And again, if memory serves, when you actually tear it, you can play through it. Like, there is a degree of like, you get surgery in the off season, but your season's not over in many circumstances. So we could see, like you're talking about, the fact that he was able to practice does not mean there's no labrum surgery in the future. Maybe.
What's so tough about that specifically with him is he wears a shoulder harness on his left shoulder because he's had those two surgeries. So if he was to play with a torn labrum, he would have to wear another shoulder harness on his right shoulder. And I legitimately don't even know if that's possible to play with two harnesses on both shoulders.
Oh, man.
Hopefully. It's just a complete disaster of a right situation. And I really hope they get it figured out in the offseason.
Hopefully things do get figured out in the offseason, because Johnson's a phenomenal corner that I will say, if there's one major question I have with Pagano, I don't know why he made him play as much zone as he did, given the success he showed in press early in the year, but we can analyze that another time. For now, Brandon, the sponsors need to get their word in, and you know me, I'm beholden to these sponsors. They pay the bills around here. So we'll step aside. We'll be right back after the break to talk about the offense.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And we are back with Bear With Me. I'm joined by Brandon Robinson as we discuss the end of the Bears season to the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs, which, by the way, makes these Bears in the playoffs the last 2 out of 3 years. And I understand that a lot of people are like, this doesn't really count. They got beat by the Saints. They got beat pretty handily. But you know what? Every playoff appearance matters. Every playoff appearance counts. This gives guys like Cole Kmet, even whether you do or don't like him, guys like Mitch Trubisky, guys like Allen Robinson. Yeah, I could have picked younger guys. And I should have. Guys like Kendall Vildor, Duke Shelley, and others, Bilal Nichols, another one, valuable playoff experience that I think they're able to carry with them throughout the rest of their careers, which is great. The trouble here was that the Bears having 9 points is almost like a lying number because they had 3 points for the entire game. And those 3 points came off of a John Jenkins interception that if they had somehow managed to not end up with 3 points, might have been more impressive. Now, there were a lot of factors to this because Mitch Trubisky threw a dime for a touchdown that did not get caught. That ultimately resulted in no points. Cole Kmet had a, let's call it unusual, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, where I got to tell you, Brandon, that seemed like one of those where the only note that I would give to the kid if it was me would be, hey, you can't put yourself in position for a referee to get, let's say, I'm trying to think of an appropriate way to say it, to get upset. Let's just say that. Because it looked to me like Cole knew what he was doing and wasn't attempting to taunt the defender, but referee took it that way, and ultimately what the referee says goes. Either way, despite some bad breaks, they still didn't do anything. And after having all the offensive explosion that we had for 4 weeks in a row there, literally first 30-point 4 week in a row since 1965, I was hoping a little bit more than 16 points against Packers and three against the Green Bay or against the New Orleans Saints on turf, no less, which should be a little faster to play on. Am I the only one here that's just a little disappointed with the way things played out?
No, not at all. I thought they had a decent defensive game plan. I mean, offensive game plan. I thought they were running basically a lot of the stuff they had been running. I think one thing that they could have done is they could have checked out of some of the runs that they were doing, because quite a few times and few too many times they were running into loaded boxes where even if the O-line is blocking as best as they possibly can, you got guys that are going to be unblocked because they have more defenders than you have blockers in the box. So it's basically impossible for you to gain any yards. So I thought they could have checked out a lot of those. I don't know if they give Trubisky the freedom to do this at this point. It doesn't really seem like it. Doesn't seem like he's been checking out of any plays recently. And so obviously that's a problem.
I think that's where I've gotten so frustrated, Brandon. I took a lot off of podcasting this last off season because 2019 was hard. Like that season was soul sucking. But I remember coming into the 2020 season thinking, whether it's Mitch or Foles or whoever it is, all I want is answers. Like, don't leave me at the end of 2020 still playing chicken or egg. And unfortunately, that is exactly what we're doing. I can't tell you, Brandon, whether Matt Nagy's game plan, which seemed pretty conservative and, to use another word that I know you've used before, kind of cowardly, was because Nagy is a coward or because he doesn't believe in Mitch and is correct in doing so. Mitch hit his two deep shots early in the game, but then as the game progressed, he missed a corner out. He had a couple other throws that were kind of like, oh no. He didn't seem to get pressured a ton, which was neat, but after those two deeper passes, which he nailed, I'd say he nailed, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, to start the half, they got into that like red zone or 40-yard-ish area, and they took a sack. They then didn't want to throw down the field anymore, and everything just clobbered back up. I mean, it reminds me, I think a perfect example is at the end of the first half, the Bears had a chance to go put some points on the board. They called a run. Unusual. Okay. But it got 6 yards. They then call another run. Okay. But hey, it got 2 yards, set up a third and two. From there, Matt Nagy takes David Montgomery off the field, puts Ryan Nall back on, and calls a triple option. It doesn't look like a triple option because the quarterback just hands it to the back, but Mitch Trubisky has the option to hand it to Nall, keep it himself, or even bubble out to Anthony Miller, who has Charles Leno in front of him. So about as good of a blocker. I know Bears fans make fun of Leno, but like, you get a lineman out there on a bubble screen, you could do a lot worse with that sort of situation. And Trubisky, the quarterback run route, has a blocker, Cole Kmet, out in front of him. Based on what I've seen with the play, the edge crashes down a little late, but as soon as Trubisky extends that ball to Nall, the edge crashes down. Trubisky hands it to Nall anyways, which he shouldn't do. He should pull the ball, and he would have had the yards, let alone maybe a 20-30 yard run, had he kept it. And the reaction on Twitter was expectedly polarized, right? It was, you've got to be kidding me, Mitch. You're supposed to keep that. It's clear. Versus Nagy's play calling sucks. What a total Nagy play call. Ryan Nall carry on third and two? Are you kidding me? And this is exactly what we were doing for an entire year. You know what I mean? Like, arguing about whether it's the quarterback or is it the coach. And then you look at this season, and I'll finish up on this point. Like, you have this Nick Foles set, right? With some absolutely terrible offensive line play. And whether you do or don't agree with Pro Football Focus, they had literally every single Nick Foles game graded between a 55 at best, which is bad, or a 33 at worst. And there are like three of those. So Nick Foles had a bad offensive line, and he still beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and took this very same Saints team to overtime. So while we did lose to the Titans and while we did lose to the Minnesota Vikings, you almost have to wonder, like, what the heck am I supposed to think? Because this game, like, chicken or egg, was it Trubisky who had 107 yards before garbage time, or was it Nagy who somehow had his quarterback only get 107 yards before garbage time? I am tired of arguing. that's where I'm at.
Going back to the 2 minute drill, and this is where it gets a little complicated, because it goes all the way back to the coin toss before the game even starts. The coaches want absolute control of the middle eight, and the middle eight is the last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. And so that's why a lot of coaches will defer the kickoff to get the ball after halftime, is because they're guaranteed to get the football. So if they have the football at the end of the half, they have full control of the middle eight. And so what it seemed to me was that Nagy was terrified to give the ball back to the Saints and ruin the middle eight and give up a late minute drive, which I would be scared to do that too. You didn't want to give the Saints the ball with a minute left. But you get in situations where it's do or die, like situations like that are do or die. If you go down and you score a touchdown or kick a field goal, now you're in position to take the lead and or maybe even expand upon that. But when you just run, I really don't like that. I would call it cowardice. I don't like that. I would rather just sink with the ship, because you can't expect the defense to hold up in the second half when you have three backups playing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's not realistic.
Wholeheartedly. I think the worst part about this, so granted, if I was going to judge Nagy on one thing, and by judge, I mean speak negatively, it's that Nagy seems to actually kind of care what the media says. Like, if the media calls for more I formation, lo and behold, there's more I formation. Like, there's actually a trend, if you go back and watch, where the media whines about something and it changes. Like, the same week that everybody called for Mitch Trubisky, Mitch is in the game, like against Green Bay. There's a lot more than just that. And if you actually care, you can DM me and I can try to go find some more examples. Just know it happens. But one thing that has been kind of funny is that I've seen Nagy get killed for being aggressive at both the end of the half, like the Detroit game week one, where the Bears turned it over and the Lions got points out of it, where he goes for the kill shot against Tampa Bay. The ball ends up incomplete on a pretty decent throw to Allen Robinson. There are plenty of examples here of Matt Nagy being aggressive where it bite him in the butt. And in this specific moment, I kind of agree with what Romo's saying, where Nagy wanted to just see how the clock went. It's almost like he wanted to bleed it down to like 50 seconds and then go crazy. And you know what? If the Saints only have 50 seconds, what are they going to do with it? But even so, I'm not saying that's a good plan. It obviously didn't work. It ended up with the Bears killing, effectively taking three knees and killing their own clock so that they could not make it, then take the ball. And then they were able to move the ball a little bit until things stalled out at the 40. I don't know. What frustrates me is that I can't tell whether Mitch Trubisky is the reason that with the Nick Foles game, the Bears were running pin and pull. They were running duo. They were running inside zone. They were running outside zone. They ran crack tosses. They ran sweeps. They ran a lot of weird stuff to try to keep a better Saints defensive line on their toes with Jason Spriggs and Rashad Coward in the game. And then with, I think, a better offensive line, they just ran duo and outside zone. And they got destroyed. I mean, like 2.3 yards per carry. I think it's 2.4 if you round up the fact that it's 2.375, and that's going to get you nothing in an offensive game plan that has become designed around assuming you succeed with the run at least a little bit to open up play action, because whether analytics thinks that you do or don't need play action or run success to run play action, Nagy does. So you have to care, because Matt Nagy cares if you're judging this offense. It's wild to me, because again, I don't know whether that has anything to do with the quarterback or anything to do with the offensive line, but the Bears basically decided in the run game, which has nothing to do with Trubisky, to just go mano a mano and scrap with a better Saints defensive line. And it didn't work. And I could have told you it wouldn't have worked. And
right. Like you could have said that before the game, because the Saints have a top three run defense. Yeah. So you should know coming into the game that Alex Barnes and Sam Mustipher aren't going to move these dudes off the spot. Like, you have to know that they have better Jimmys and Joes than you do. So let's try something else.
Mm-hmm. And when the Bears were able to run it for 5 yards of pop, it's actually closer to four, but more or less 4 yards of pop with Rashad Coward and Jason Spriggs, you know that that's a better game plan. And I'm really shocked the Bears didn't at least try something. And granted, they haven't run almost any varied run schemes with Trubisky in the game at all. I'm talking pre-fulls. I'm talking post-fulls. It has been outside zone, almost no inside zone, Bears fans. I know they look like an inside zone run call when David Montgomery sees that Alex Barnes gets blown 3 yards into the backfield and cuts the run up the field. But just because the run goes inside does not mean it's inside zone. A lot of that's just Montgomery. I think it's called a bend, right? He's bending it, not banging it or bouncing it. And he loves to bend those runs. But the Bears then tried to use duo to move the Saints offensive line. That didn't work either, as they weren't able to. Duo is basically just a bunch of double teams, and that didn't work. And I just found myself, Brandon, a little unenthusiastic about it. And of course, the easy thing to do in that moment is to reach and say, if only we had a better quarterback. But there's an aspect of that that almost doesn't feel fair either, you know?
Yeah, I think it is partly with the quarterback, just because they weren't checking out of runs. Like, there were so many situations where it's 2nd and 10. I can see that there's 8 defenders in the box. I can tell you from my couch that they're not going to get yards. and they still run the football. And that's a problem. Like, it's the playoffs. It's not, you're not playing the Jags, you're not playing the Vikings, you're not playing any of these really bad teams. You have to be able to check out of these runs and do something else. And when you can't do that, that's a huge problem, because it basically handcuffs your team.
And the worst part is, Brandon, is that I actually saw them check out a couple plays a few times, and I'm talking like motion at the line of scrimmage, but guess what? Literally all of them were before the 15-second mark, which has me wondering, is the quarterback doing it, or does he hear in his headset, hey, change it to this. You gotta change the play. You're doing this now. Like, at what point I don't know how this offense is functioning. We can't, right? There's no way for us to be in the huddle. We can't hear the play call. We don't know the chain of command. We literally don't even know if Laser's still calling the plays. Like, there's so much we don't know about this. All we know is that it isn't working. And if it's me, right? There is something Tony Romo said that resonated with me. Now, granted, I will make it abundantly clear that I have a bias towards liking Matt Nagy. I think a lot of what he's done schematically has been a lot better than what other people think. I think a lot of his issues have come down to execution, which I crushed him for that 6-game winning streak, because at some point when you're not able to line up, there's obvious problems. Like, there's clear reasons that Kyle Long doesn't like the guy, but at the same time, he somehow managed to rally his team into the playoffs. And you may say, oh, 8-8, that's not impressive at all. But after a 6-game soul-rending winning streak, that team, or a lot of teams, fold. The Texans certainly folded as soon as they were mathematically eliminated, and went from looking really good against the Lions to getting devastated by us, the Bears, and never picking themselves up. And now Deshaun Watson wants out of the organization. Like, what the Bears did, pulling themselves together and beating a bunch of bad teams, but thumping them and taking it to a divisional rival in the Vikings to end up making the playoffs, it shouldn't be just thrown out. It doesn't have to get 5-star rating from your opinion, but it isn't the mark of a terrible coach. I think that's fair to say. At the same time, the offense has left a lot to be desired for 3 whole years. Like, there's a lot to this. Where I have ended up landing, just to make an argument shorter, is that Matt Nagy has 2 more years on his contract. And if it was me, I'd do the whole promote pace thing, bring in another GM. If that GM wants his own coach, sure. But if you want to ride out 1 more year on Nagy's contract so that McCaskies don't have to pay 2 coaches for 2 years, I'm not upset about it. Does that make sense?
So you think they're going to promote Pace, or you would promote Pace?
That was
those are 2 different things.
I do think Pace stays in the building. I really do. I mean, I get the impression they love Ryan Pace. He led this renovation of Hallis Hall that's gotten a lot of acclaim over the last couple, or like over the last year or so. Would shock me if he was fired, but I understand if Ted Phillips is going to retire, they're going to want somebody to take his place. And while I don't know if Ryan Pace is the name that I would pick for a team president, it would make a lot of sense, and it would technically change GM, even though the same guy's in the building running, or like technically presiding over the ship.
Because my issue is, you get into the chain of command type situations where it's Pace, and then it's the GM, and then it's Nagy. And you get in, Pace has made a bunch of moves that you can tell that he went and got, quote unquote, his guy, no matter what. And so I just don't want to be in the position where Pace needs his guy, but the GM doesn't want to overpay him, but Pace overrules him and goes and gets his guy.
You mean like a backseat GM kind of thing? Like a, right, I know exactly. I'm the president, but I was GM for 6 years kind of situation.
Right. That, like, we don't do that here. We get our guys. We get our guys here. I really don't want to see that situation. But for Matt Nagy, I think he's learned from some of his mistakes. And I think the thing is, I say maybe just because I'm not in the building, but if I had to put my money on, I would say that he has, because it seems like he has evolved as a coach as he's went on, because I feel like he just had no idea about certain things, and he's slowly, like the aggression thing. But yeah, I don't think he made the call when it came to the 2-minute warning. But when you think about his fourth down situations, he's gone for it in astronomically a lot more than he has before. Like he never used to go for it on fourth down, and he's completely changed the script on that. Mm-hmm. So I would be fine if they moved on, but I would also be fine if they kept him. Like, yeah. Because the thing is, as I was saying with Chuck Pagano, just because they fire Matt Nagy does not mean they're going to make the right decision with the next coach.
Right. I am, like you're talking about, deeply, I think the word is ambivalent, but I'll go with apathetic about Matt Nagy's firing or not, because I really have seen, like, this isn't, so Mitch Trubisky is the kind of quarterback that over his career, if I could just speak candidly, he doesn't tend to do a lot of good things, and he tends to avoid a lot of bad things. The best thing you could say about him is that he's a very frenetic Kyle Orton. The worst thing you could say about him is that he doesn't do anything well, but that he tends not to do anything like really badly either, besides reading the field, which you can mask with the right systems, and the Bears have tried to. When it comes to Matt Nagy, I see a lot of really good. The players seem to play for him in literally any circumstance. And then I've seen a whole lot of awful, like really, really bad, like how Foles couldn't seem to get the team lined up for weeks. And that has never happened in Foles' tenure. So I don't know what was going on there, or the fact that we spent almost a year and a half with 10 guys doing one thing and one guy doing another. That has made it to where, like you're talking about, what I would turn myself to is, I'm going to say a dangerous word here, Brandon, hope. Because the one thing that you can say about Matt Nagy that you can't say about Kyle Shanahan is that Matt Nagy actually has realistic room to grow in his role as a head coach, which somebody might say, what are you talking about? How could Kyle Shanahan not grow? And I'd look back at you and I'd say, Kyle Shanahan was an offensive coordinator for 10 years. And as I understand coaches, most of the time when they learn a lesson and then relearn it and cement it and really just hammer that lesson home, that's how they do it. And there's no real changing it. In the words of a couple coaches I've heard, I really only know one way to coach. And that's the way guys like John Fox and Jeff Fisher have had their day and then lost their day and are now out of the league. How that relates to Matt Nagy, though, is that Matt Nagy was only offensive coordinator for a single year. I actually think, like you're talking about, there's a lot of room to say he doesn't know everything, that he doesn't have every situation ironed out. And as it seems that his team continues to play for him, I'm willing to say that, you know what, if they did keep him on for a year, I'll keep grading him as fairly as I can, and we'll see where this goes. I'm not trying to wave my pom-poms for him. I just don't want him out of the building as badly as a lot of Bears fans do, because I don't think that, I understand we lost Darnell Mooney, and I think Darnell Mooney's awesome too, but execution still should have been better than this, and execution needed to be better partially because the talent needs to be better. It's again, we're back to the chicken and the egg thing, where Matt Nagy makes a lot of mistakes, but a lot of those mistakes make sense from a frame of mind of the talent isn't good enough to throw intermediate routes, for instance. The talent isn't good enough to hold off the Saints defensive line for 4.5 seconds to set up a downfield passing play. Like, you need a ton of wildcat action, and then you used it. There's a whole lot of give and wiggle room and complication that I'd look at, and I'd say, I'm not going to mind if we end up getting a fourth year of data with when it comes to Matt Nagy.
Yeah, I think it's a really tough situation, and I think they have to fully evaluate everything that's happened over these 3 years before they make a decision. And it's funny that you brought up I only know one way to coach, because I have coached or been around coaches that have that same frame of mind. I like so many times, and that is the exact worst kind of coach that you could possibly want. And absolutely. I know for a fact, if I know anything about Matt Nagy, I know for a fact he is not one of those coaches, because he completely changed his offense coming into this year. Before this, the 2018-2019, they're completely spread coast. Coming in this year, they're running basically Sean McVay's offense. They're running under center, outside zone, play action. Nothing, absolutely exact opposite of what the read tree and what Andy Reid has ever run.
Mm-hmm. And it's the sort of thing that, again, gives me hope, because while it worked sort of and didn't work also sort of. It's one of right. It's complicated because it's like, did it work? Well, we beat Tampa Bay and we took New Orleans to overtime, but also it didn't because we got thumped by a lot of teams and looked like we didn't know what we were doing. Like we looked like a team that had been put in cryo sleep through training camp, got woken up and said, hey, you're playing the Rams today. Get at them, guys.
But I'll ask you this. How many offenses do you see like, or coaches that coach really bad quarterbacks on a consistent basis that win?
Right.
Like how many? Like I honestly can't think of one. People would say, Jared Goff. Like, no, absolutely not. Trubisky is not Jared Goff. And he's definitely not Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is way better than him. And those are the first, I know that's the first two people that a majority of Bears fans would think of.
But even using Goff as an example, Sean McVay has had some awful losses with right. Goff under center. That if we just changed the coach, so Sean McVay is a Bear now and Matt Nagy has had the exact same career, I think a lot of people would be saying the same thing if we had had some of those losses. Jared Goff, those five interceptions, none of them are his fault, dadgummit. I like my guy. But all jokes aside, the point being that Sean McVay has had his moments where he looks flat out outcoached too. And in Chicago, we act like Matt Nagy outcoaching Bruce Arians, Matt Nagy potentially outcoaching Sean Payton, because I don't think Nick Foles, Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson, and the rest of that offense should have been in a tie game with that, or with that Saints team in any capacity. Like, we act like some of these victories don't stack up when compared to getting outcoached by Mike Vrabel when Alex Barrs is playing his first game ever at center in a real NFL game. Like, there's a whole bunch of factors to all this, and it's just not that simple. You know what I mean? Like, Lovie Smith went to a Super Bowl off the back of a legendary defense, had a terrible offense, took the praise and the fall for both. Because that's what it means to be a head coach. And like you're talking about, most of the teams that are winning here, like you can take a look at the playoffs, most of them have a capable quarterback in some capacity. And if they don't, I'll just use the Browns because I know a lot of people are up, but a lot of people are down on Baker, have the best running game in football, with which you can underline and put in all caps because it's the best one. It's like, it's a very weird gambit when you look at Nagy and his offense and you say, I expect better out of a team that can't consistently run the ball against not bottom tier opponents and has a quarterback that tends to struggle in a lot of facets of the game. I expect that offense to be at least average. And you're like, well, you just listed the case for why it should be terrible. And it is, like, from a talent perspective.
And the thing is, when you bring in a new offense, that offense has to slowly evolve as time goes. Like, you can't expect Matt Nagy to bring in an entire new offense, which he did this offseason, and just expect it to just suddenly blossom. I always think back to the Packers last year, because last year they had a lot of success. But if you remember correctly, it was on the backs of their defense. Their defense was dominant last year. They were making so many plays off of their pass rush, but their offense wasn't very good. They were obviously, because they were trying to replace Aaron Rodgers. But now they didn't bring in too many people on offense, but they have evolved because of time. They got more time during the offseason. They got more practice time. They were slowly able to evolve as time went on.
And you said it, and I hate that you said this, by the way, but I'll repeat it anyways because it's a smart thought. If the Bears iterate on this Nagy Vay offense, like a blend of Nagy concepts and Sean McVay attitude, it will be an easier offense to integrate a new quarterback into, which is not normal, because normally your quarterback kind of is the centerpiece of the offense. Like, moving on, or if you subbed out Jordan Love or subbed in Jordan Love and out Aaron Rodgers, the offense would probably have to roll back to year one just because Love only knows 1 year of the offense. Well, with what the Bears are doing, they can build a lot around a question mark quarterback and fill in that question mark down the road. And I said I hate it because I love the Nagy spread, or not Nagy, the Reed spread coast, but we'll have to put that on pause because, like you're talking about, that takes years of foundation and ideally a quarterback that comes in equipped to run it. And the Bears are going to be, they're going to have to get creative at the quarterback position, especially if they, I'll give this to Bears fans, especially if they want somebody that is obviously better than Mitchell Trubisky, because as much as we could look at the Taylor Heinekes of the world and say, hey, look at that guy can make a throw over a linebacker into an NFL window. Where's that been for years? As much as I can say that if you put Taylor Heinicke in the starting role, I have a feeling he'd end the season looking more like Trevor Siemian than say he did in the playoffs. It's not hard, or it's a lot less hard to pop off in one unscouted game than it is to do so over 16 games where a defense has tape. That said, we can get to the quarterback conversation later. I'm sure we have plenty of time to let that rage on. What are your final thoughts about this Saints game?
Final thoughts is I'm just not really surprised with the outcome. I can't say enough of how impressed I was with Tayshaun Gibson's performance. I thought he played absolutely out of his mind. I thought he probably had the best performance on the entire team. I hope they can, I know these last two games were kind of brutal, but I hope they can move on with the successes they had and roll it into next season and hopefully have a better year next year.
I'll play the opposite card. I am happy the Bears could be here. I'm even happier that they're not getting blown out. For Bears fans reference, the Steelers are losing 0-28, and I don't think they're out of the first half yet. So that wasn't us. And as much as we would say the Bears got destroyed, it's like, well, actually, for a 7 seed, they really didn't look all that bad against the Saints. I really don't think they did. Offense inept, sure. But the defense looked spicy, and I think it held up the Chicago namesake. At least I think so.
Yeah, if you think about last year, how this would have went, the Bears would not have been in the playoffs and the Saints would have had a bye.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. Those are the two teams that we're playing tonight.
100%. Like, it shouldn't have been this close. This should have been a blowout, but it wasn't. What I will say, Brandon, is that I hope, if I have a hope for this year, I really hope that this makes the Bears hungry, starving, just drooling at the mouth to fix the offense. Because in this last year, I saw a Ryan Pace led an effort to keep the defense healthy and try to make the offense decent. We saw Jermaine Ifedi brought in as the solution at offensive line. Rashad Coward is the sixth man. Nick Foles as the quarterback two. And that was kind of it for the changes. We drafted Cole Kmet, who was always a two-year project at best. You don't want to call him a bust? I don't either, actually. But I know some do. Even so, we knew he wasn't going to do anything as a rookie. Then we brought in Jimmy Graham, who might as well be a graduated rookie. Caught a ton of touchdowns. Had a sick final catch. Like, that at the end of the season, that was awesome. But either way, I look at this offense, I think it needs more help on the offensive line. I think it needs a stronger quarterback one way or another, or even just take a chance. But we can get into that in a little while. Cole Kmet needs to grow. Wouldn't mind help at wide receiver, but really it's that like offensive line infusion. I want to see Chicago aggressively attack making this offense better, even if it means a defense that embarrasses itself in 2021. I am done trying to let defense win football games, because at 7-3, I just sat there wanting to pull my eyes out of my head, wondering why the offense couldn't do anything. We'll see what the Bears actually do. But I hope, especially if Matt Nagy sticks around, that this makes them so hungry for offensive success that they find something to bite at and try to squeeze their way into that top 12 in 2021. That's at least what I'd love to see.
I'm here for it too. Any improvement, especially on offense, because offense wins games. It used to be offense was just for entertainment. But now it's proven offense wins games, offense wins leagues, offense moves the needle.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe me, and you know what? I will be willing. You can keep this as a receipt. When we see the Packers square off against the Chiefs in the bowl, then you can let me know, because they are in different conferences, right? Yes. Yes, they are. Thank goodness. Cause I'm so bad at conferences, Bears fans. I am despicably bad separating the AFC and the NFC, but when the Packers and the Chiefs square off, two of the most high powered offenses in the league, you'll see it's these points nowadays that are winning football games. Defense wins championships is a bit of an old adage, and it's fun to say if you're a Chicago fan, but I just don't know if it's true anymore. Anyways, either way, Brandon, thanks so much for coming on, helping digest this game with me. Where can folks find you?
Thanks for having me. They can find me at BRobNFL on Twitter. I'm excited for the offseason. I'll be getting into NFL draft and NFL draft prospects, and I'm Excited for that.
I'm going to keep bothering you until you write coverage pieces for us, because we can use the help.
Well, hopefully I can after I get done with this move.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thanks so much, Brandon. I will talk to you soon.
Talk to you then.
And Bears fans, that's going to wrap this one up. If you like what I have to say, feel free to follow me over on Twitter at Robert K. Schmitz or on YouTube at Run Pass Opinion, where no doubt I'll be going through more offseason content as I look to break down the 2020 Bears, specifically looking at Allen Robinson right now. Does and doesn't he deserve an extension? And then getting on to other topics. Make sure you follow Brandon. Please give this podcast a rating if you would be so kind on whatever service you're listening to, positive or negative, any feedback helps. And Bears fans, while the season may be over, the new 2021 season has only just begun. So until next time, bear down, and thanks so much for bearing with me.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.